member and contributor with CL Club. She now is going to be heading up our teams or PAC programs, which are our presidential advisory committees. And we've been, over the last few months, putting together a program that NARA's really done a great job doing. And, you know, we had Paul speaking today, and we just thought it was such a good inroad into what we're doing with NARA that it kind of fit well to do both together. You know, as you know, CL Club over the last 4 years has done thousands of PACs, okay, PAC meetings. And everything's evolved over time. So if you look at things from the 80s to the 90s to now, people get information differently. They see things differently. There's so much information. There's everything on YouTube, everything on Google, and so on and so forth. So they're not overwhelmed by anything anymore. You know, you could say, "Oh, I got Bill Clinton coming. Oh, I saw him 3 times." You know, or I have 52 videos that I'm going to watch of Bill Clinton. 10 years ago or 12 years ago, that would have been huge. All right. You don't get this. You don't have the same reaction. So what we saw is that with the PACs, people are looking for not only a process where there's milestones that are driven in the PACs, but there's actions that are followed through from each meeting, and that people are looking for specifics. They're looking for specific help in areas. So instead of coming in and giving a global process where, okay, what ails you this week, like we have been doing, we decided to change things around and to go in more of a different direction of getting to some type of specificity with regards to certain issues that plague people or certain issues that people want to overcome. It may be from growing their business to dealing with conflict in the work environment to you name it. So instead of coming in and throwing anything against the wall, we decided to come in with a very straight plan and a very organized plan. And Nora's been instrumental in putting that together, and she's worked with several people already within the club and nothing but positive reviews. So, some of you very much know that. So I want to introduce Nora. She's going to give an overview of this. I know we're on a schedule, so we're very sensitive to everybody's time. But these handouts, by the way, are overviews of what we're going to be doing with her PACs and with her different levels. You can talk to Nora directly about getting involved, and this will be going out to all of the membership around the country over the next week or so. So anyway, Nora, the floor is
yours. Thank you guys so much. Thank you. Yay. So I want to talk today a little bit about the science behind how we build a tribe, here in CEO Club, how building a tribe within the CEO Club can inform and empower everyone sitting here in this room, everyone who considers themselves a member of this group, to go out and implement these tools wherever they are, with their clients, with their employees, with, you know, as Paul Zach said, with family, with friends, with personal relationships. These tools will work everywhere because this is how humans work. So I want to talk about how we build tribes for growth. I'll be talking about how those tribes show up inside of the personal professional group program that we're talking about. That's one of the names we've devised for the Presidential Advisory Councils. So let's talk a little bit of theory first. Hello.
I decided listening to you was more important than where I was going.
I told you.
So I'm like, all right.
Wow.
Sorry.
So I'll talk a little bit about the handout first. So what we've devised is this very kind of buffet-oriented situation where you can, you know, we have the historical Presidential Advisory Council model where, you know, there's a group of people, they are members of a group, you know, they're each members, they meet every other month, they get a conference call on the off-cycle months, and that's kind of how it looks. And as Kevin started calling members of this group and saying, do you guys want to do that? Is that something you're interested in? A lot of people said, well, can I get something a little more tailored to what my particular issues are? And I'm very, very lucky, blessed, privileged to have developed all these various neuroscience tools into more than 50 different modules. So Kevin asked me to put together a more tailored approach so that people could have a combination of personal sessions, group sessions, etc. And basically, I would curate who goes in which group so that people can get the maximal level of support and success. So that's this handout, and actually this handout has a list of the more than 50 modules in case you're curious. So that's something to meditate on. But let's talk today about the conceptual framework for how we're gonna do all this work together. Does that sound good to you guys? Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Say yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, good. Hopefully you mean that. Okay, so I'm gonna talk about the different ways. I'm gonna talk about basically three different contexts in which the tribal experience of human existence informs how we do what we do as human beings, and how, more importantly, how we achieve growth, how we achieve success. Make sense so far? Cool.
Yes.
Okay, so here's a picture of a tribe. Yay! Yay, a tribe. Okay. So the first area where I want to talk about building a tribe for growth is in childhood. So anybody recognize any of the people in these photos? With my hair all a mess up here, you like that? So this is the day my son met his little brother, right? You guys have, some of you, if you were here at 9 o'clock, you met my younger son. He's here, and he'll come back after he's had his bottle of pumped milk so that I can not be breastfeeding him while we're doing this right now. This is my favorite picture of my older son, and this is me the day my second son was born. So yay, babies, woohoo! So why are babies important? Why are human children important? One of the things I find most fascinating about the way that we understand these principles and how we apply them is looking at how babies in the human world compare to babies in the rest of the animal world. So human babies are actually the least developed beings when they're born across the entire animal kingdom. They are the most dependent, the least developed. Why is this good for evolution to have these really vulnerable little beings that, you know, that can't survive without not only their mommies the way, you know, bears and chimpanzees need their mommies, but literally a veritable tribe of support. You know, my second son is 5 weeks old. I can tell you, I can't handle him alone, right? I need as many other adults in the house as humanly possible. I try to keep those times when I'm alone with the two kids very short, very, very short. We've got a veritable tribe of people helping me, which is wonderful, I love it. So why is that? Well, it turns out that when babies are born, we have very, very few connections in our brain. So we're born with over 100 billion neurons, right? Anybody know what a neuron is? It's basically a processing tool that exists in our brain. We have over 100 billion of them, right? And it turns out neuroscience researchers are finding every day new evidence that there are neurons across our nervous system, including in our fingertips, right? And those neurons are, they are similar to the various different kinds of neurons in our brain. I won't go into all the specifics, but it's pretty neat. But nothing really happens in the brain until there are connections between the neurons. We call these connections synapses, and these synapses are the way that information travels throughout our body and our brains so that we can make decisions about the world around us, so that we can take in information about the world around us. Make sense so far? So the fact is that human babies have very little capacity to make decisions, take in information, understand the world around them, and that's very good. Why? Because it means that they develop almost their entire capacity for understanding their world after they're born. Which is to say, because we are so vulnerable, because we are so underdeveloped when we are born, we are also the most adaptable beings on the planet. We are also the most capacity-filled beings on the planet, right? And we have expanded human capacity, and we have expanded human lifespan, human thinking capacity over thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Exciting?
Now, absolutely.
Yes, good. I'm so glad you think so, John. So in addition to that, what that means is that each individual human has remarkable expansive capacity throughout childhood and throughout adulthood. Make sense so far? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yes.
So, and we can expand in groups even more quickly than we can expand as individuals. In fact, I offer you that it is it is an illusion that we expand as individuals. We simply cannot exist on the planet. From an evolutionary perspective, we can't exist without other humans. There are some very isolated, introverted people living on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I think we've all encountered them on the subway once or twice, right? Those people can't get their groceries delivered without the existence of other humans. Am I right? So,
yes,
good. John keeps telling me yes. I love hearing all those messages.
Well, we want you to be happy. I'm reinforcing you.
He's another human.
Yes, he's a fellow human. I can't make this speech without fellow
Maybe.
Human.
I think. Probably.
So let's talk about the four ingredients that lead to the healthiest synaptic development. And this is important because you don't just develop synapses with the natural biological processes of childhood. You actually have the capacity to develop and shift and change your synapses throughout your entire adult life. This is important for us as people who can be members of this CEO club tribe. And it's important for our influence and our power with our clients and our employees, right? In terms of our capacity to help them build, shift, change their synapses for them to achieve new levels of growth. Everybody with me so far? Kind of exciting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out there are only four ingredients that we need to create a regular growth experience around synaptic capacity, around human capacity, around the neuroscience of human achievement, okay? And those ingredients are easiest to identify, I think, when we're looking at childhood, right? So first and foremost in childhood, we all need stimulation, right? You need colors, shapes, numbers, letters, right? If we're thinking of tribal times, you need to be playing with the animal skins that everybody turns into clothing, right? You need to be, working with the things that mommy's cooking and all the other ladies of the tribe are cooking and playing with daddy's tools. And, these are the kinds of ways that that human children interact with information and ultimately learn what we think of as the sort of most straightforward kind of information, right? Facts, numbers, skills, physical skills. Does this make sense so far?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And in our modern times, it has a lot to do with like reading and numbers and, learning to talk. My 19-month-old is, coming up with new words every day, right? Now, all that stimulation, all that learning and information is only going to take us so far if we don't also have nurturing. Right? If we don't also have a consistent experience of love and support, right? And in fact, what we just heard from Paul Zak is that he and his colleagues in his lab have been able to identify the neurochemicals that are being fired when people are effectively exchanging support, effectively exchanging nurturing, right? I'm not sure how much mother-child research he's done, but he doesn't really need to do that much because that's actually an area where there's been an enormous amount of research into the neurochemicals. What's fascinating is that both Paul and I have applied this research in business and with different takes. But in fact, what I, this love and this nurturing is so important that it is the first experience that we begin to experience. It is the first ingredient that we begin to encounter. Does anybody have a sense of when we begin to encounter this ingredient?
Which? Love and nurturing?
Love and nurturing, as opposed to information or structure. I mean,
when
you see,
we first do it?
The answers are on the board, so.
Before you're born.
That's right, in the womb, right? And I always joke that I wish I could be pregnant all the time, because it's the best audio visual, the best visual aid when I'm giving these sorts of talks, right? I get to touch my stomach and go, oh my gosh, there's a baby in here and he's developing, his capacity for love and nurturing, right? And now that he's outside my body and the nanny can take care of him. Thank you. And a nanny can take care of him at least part of the day, right? He's also continuing to develop that capacity for love and nurturing long, long before the synapses will begin to fire around language, around thought, around color, around numbers, long, long before any of that kicks in, right? He's cuddling and, being held and, moving around and touching, like he's just started to do this thing. John, you're gonna be me and I'm gonna be the baby. He's just started to do this thing where he's kind of like touching you like this, right?
Oh.
Right? Kind of nice, right? Wait till the baby does it to you, it's even better. all of these mechanisms are mechanisms for exchanging love and nurturing, right? And so they begin so early, and they are definitive for our existence as humans. And if we ignore them at work, we ignore them at our peril. Correct? Everybody with me so far?
Yes.
Yes, yes, good job, good. Structure. A child needs a consistent experience of good information and good nurturing, right? And the kind of information and the kind of nurturing that a child needs will change over time, right? Who here has kids over the age of 10? I don't, but I'll raise my hand empathetically, right? So what your children needed at age 8 was very different from what they needed at age 2, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So their needs for the specifics of love and nurturing and the specific information that will stimulate and engage them will shift and change over time, right? And it turns out that in adulthood, the same is true. Our needs for new information that calls us forth, information that gets us excited, will change when we've been on the job 10 years in versus 1 year in, right? And as long as we are continuing to commit to engaging people with new stimulation and a support and a kind of support that works for them, right? That combination will almost always lead to growth as long as there's a consistent structure for it, right? Now the fourth ingredient is one that's so obvious for any of you who either have children or have been a child. Anybody here been a child?
Anybody?